Is affection just a reality biologically wired into dogs to show us they're happy for very good reasons of survival? Or is there more going on with the dogs in our homes? On TikTok, someone's put a wearable on their dog, which looks like a bulldog, while they were away at work to see how many steps the dog took. And the dog took 26. This is not scientific. There's another dog on TikTok and Instagram called Bunny the Talking Dog, a sheep-a-doodle. She has 5 million followers and she communicates with her owner, Alexis Devine, through an array of buttons on the floor. She touches the buttons with her paw and each button represents a thing or an emotion or a desire. And it vocalizes. It's a bit hard to hear, but in this little clip, Alexis and Bunny have just got home, and you'll hear Bunny press the home button and then the love you button, followed by a button that says mum.
Yep, exactly. We're home now.
Love you, mum. Bunny has learned to press 70 buttons, often one after the other. For instance, more scratches now. And if she wants to go outside, she'll press outside. So you get the idea. You might think the impressive button-pushing examples have been cherry-picked or that this is just a novelty, really. But Alexis spends a lot of time each day with her dog, and she's doing it on behalf of the Comparative Cognition Laboratory at the University of California. This lab studies people and cultures as well as animals, and for a while now it's been running a project called They Can Talk. Professor Federico Rossano is its director, and he joins us. Hello.
Hi.
You're studying the dog Bunny to find out what exactly?
Bunny is part of a study called They Can Talk, where we're interested in trying to understand whether dogs can learn to use symbols to communicate with humans. The idea is to try to understand whether they can learn a system similar to human language and what it would reveal about their cognitive abilities, their mind, their feelings, their way of navigating their social life and life with us.
And it's not just Bunny, of course, that you and your team are studying. I was reading there are several thousand dogs, cats, horses even involved.
Yes, we have been very lucky. It started like a small project, and by now we have more than 4,000 people that have signed up from 47 countries. And we will be delighted to have more participants from New Zealand. So please do check us out and sign up for the study. Similar studies have been done, for example, with dolphins and with a few other species. And yet it was always a very small sample size, usually 1 to 3 individuals that would be trained. It would take forever to train them. And we wanted to try and see whether instead of using and trying to rely on animals that are wild or that at least are not domesticated, maybe trying to train domesticated animals that already live with us would have made this job easier. And we seem to be quite successful with this.
So Bunny is using symbols to communicate, and the symbols generate speech, which we interpret as Bunny's speech because we anthropomorphize all the time. What do you think Bunny is doing, Federico? Is she really talking to Alexis?
Bunny is for sure communicating. To some degree, Bunny is trying to talk to Alexis. The main thing is Bunny is pushing buttons that are associated with concepts, and she learns an association between a button and a concept. One of the fascinating things, one of the tests we did was to see whether dogs bark while pushing the buttons, and they don't, because they know that the human has to hear it. In the same way, if the button does not produce a vocalization, they are surprised, and they keep pushing, looking at it, trying to figure out what's wrong with it. And we want to sort of switch the table a little bit and say, if we now give them those tools, can they start the conversation? Can they ask for things? Can they tell us what they want? And different dogs that seem to be showing the same skills that Bunny is showing, which makes me feel a little less skeptical than I was when I started this project a few months ago.
Are you noticing that some dog breeds are smarter than others, as we've always been told?
Well, this is a fantastic question, because let me put it this way. You don't need a PhD to have a conversation, right? So it is not about being the smartest. It is more about how sociable the dog is, their temperament, how willing to participate and be trained. So yes, we do see that some breeds are good, are particularly good at this. One of the surprising things, though, is that while everybody thinks of Border Collies as the best breed out there for this kind of task, we actually find that there are other breeds that are pretty good. For example, Bunny is a Sheepadoodle, and we see that there are many retrievers that are pretty good at this too. But again, 4,000 is a good number, but it's not quite enough to tell us about all the breeds. So we need more participants, and hopefully we'll be able soon to tell you more about which ones are the real best.
Professor Federico Rossano is talking to us from the Comparative Cognition Lab at the University of California. We can imagine a dog will soon learn to press a food button, or even to press a button that says love, if it'll be rewarded with a treat. But you're looking at something deeper, as you've said. You're looking, because your core interests are linguistics and psychology. So in terms of discovering where the dogs are starting conversations, as you put it, are we making progress there?
We are. We are making remarkable progress, and we're making progress in a way that to some degree was slightly unexpected. But it is clear that they are combining things to communicate. One, the question, though, is what else can it reveal about linguistic and cognitive ability beyond can they put together two or three words to produce some concept that is more complex than food, love, water, outside. And some of the things we are seeing, for example, are things related to their conception of time, their ability to think about others. So when we think about time, for example, one of the big debates is to what degree animals are stuck in time and they can only experience the present. And they don't really have memories that are defined in terms of what happened in the past. They might have some vague recollection of I like somebody, but they don't know why or what exactly happened and so on. Or they don't really think about the future. At least that's one of the claims. And yet, when you see some of these dogs communicating, they seem to be talking about things that happened earlier in the day or the day before. And sometimes they seem to be asking for things that have not happened yet, right? So you can start projecting yourself in the future. The other thing that we see is them asking about others, which is something that recently got picked up in the news. And once we see what happens in people's homes and what kind of words they're learning, what kind of words they're using, you see that a lot of the concepts they use the most are name of people in the household, name of other animals that live in the household, that they're friend with, because they're social creatures. And so as any social creature, they care about others and they notice when others are missing. And the last thing that I would like to emphasize is the potential for animal welfare in terms of communicating health problems, like pain, for example. So one of the big issues is that you might notice that your dog is not acting the usual way or not moving the usual way, but you might not quite know what's going on. And I think one of the things that is interesting is that we start seeing some of them communicating that they are in pain, or communicating even what body part is in pain. And imagine, how helpful this could be if you could have your dog let you know that they have, a problem with their paw, or they have a problem somewhere else. And then you can take them to the vet instead of having to wait for a couple of weeks and not knowing what the problem is. And so now, hopefully, we will have new tools to be able to make more sense of their life and what they need.
So are you saying we've reached the stage where if a dog presses a tummy button and then presses a pain button, we'll know that the dog has a sore tummy? Because that seems fairly astonishing.
And the question is, how much evidence do you need for that to work, right? And I think we have observed this already several times in the data we have. What we need to do is to do testing to make sure that when they are communicating that they have tummy pain, they do have tummy pain. And I mean, I'm saying this having a 19 months old that sometimes conveying that she has a finger pain just so that I stop doing what I'm doing and pay attention to her. So, you know, there might be tricks that they play on you just like children might. So 19 months old human, by the way. the reality is that you don't need to have an amazingly proficient vocabulary to be able to do this. After all, we know that children learn body parts very early on, and it's pretty simple to teach them. And so to teach dogs, you know, body parts and to teach the concept of pain is not a particularly difficult feat. So we do believe that this is definitely one of the possibilities.
Now, that's really interesting. We know about operant conditioning. You know, we a dog makes an association between pressing a button and something happening. Bunny seems to be using language, creating a narrative when she presses love you and then mom, or a series of buttons when it's too noisy in the room, ending in ouch and then sound. That's one example I saw. But we still don't know, do we? We know animals can have impressive memories, but you're looking for genuine communication rather than rote learning, and you seem to be finding it.
This is a great question. I think it's very helpful to clarify what we're talking about here. So operant conditioning is definitely the way they're learning, right? So this is the way humans are learning in many cases too. Pigeon can learn through operant conditioning, so it's not an amazing feat from a cognitive point of view. Let me give you this example. So one of the things that happened with Bunny was once she learned the concept where to refer to places, she learned an association with where dad, where basically was Alexis's partner. When he was out of the house, she would say where dad. Now, if that is all that Bunny does, so if Bunny only presses where dad and never combines where with any other noun but dad, that is not very special. But if you start now doing where cat, and you were never trained to put cat in the same spot as dad, now you start being flexible in your ability to communicate, and you start producing a sentence that you never heard before. Bunny is already being filmed 24/7, and so we actually have thousands and thousands of hours of Bunny that we are currently reviewing to see to what degree things have been modeled for Bunny and to what degree these things were used spontaneously. Also, to what degree they were reinforced or not reinforced, right? So that we can actually figure out whether what they're doing is just repeating what they heard before or what they've learned, which would be traditional operant conditioning, or whether what they're doing is actually coming up with novel combination of these buttons that would be more similar to what a toddler does when they ask you for something that you have not asked or taught them to say.
Yes, and you found that similarity. I mean, Alexis, Bunny's owner, has a healthy skepticism, and she's not trying to draw conclusions that are not warranted. Totally. But when the cat, when the cat went missing, you've mentioned the cat. Bunny at one point pressed cat, bye, and and when the man in the house, Johnny, who you've referred to, went back to work after lockdown, she began to push, where's dad? So that would seem to be self-generated and pretty impressive.
Yes, and that is basically what I'm pointing to, which is, you know, I don't want to say, hey, we have found, you know, the holy grail, or we have solved the problem. All I'm saying is there are by now, not just from Bunny, several instances of behaviors that have clearly not been modeled in that way by the humans. And the question is, was that an accident, or was that reflective of the dog ability to now produce combinations in a flexible way that would suggest some kind of cognitive and communicative ability that we didn't quite know was there? So yeah, the current impression, and again, as a scientist, I'm ready. The goal is always to falsify your hypothesis, right? So you need to kind of find every possible issue with the claim and see any possible alternative explanation for what you're seeing. So we need to review all the footage we have to make sure that these things were not actually taught or modeled or learned through some other way. But if they are indeed spontaneously generated, as is my current impression, then they would be reflective of this abilities, which I think are quite remarkable.
We don't call it love with a dog as we understand love, do we? Or maybe dog owners do, but just because a dog brain region lights up in an MRI scan when it's given the scent of its owner, I was reading about that, we think, oh, well, it doesn't prove anything. But then we think, actually, how different is this from our own brain regions lighting up? Our brains are simply more sophisticated, but dogs are doing a version of what we do, presumably.
Well, the example, so sometimes people ask me, when the dog presses, "I love you," what does it mean? Does it mean that they love you? And I'm like, when your partner tells you, "I love you," what do they mean? I mean, you have expectations and ideas based on what you think love is. But I mean, it would be honestly shocking if a dog had a sense of love or has a sense of emotions that is comparable to what humans have. But then again, I have a toddler at home, and I'm just trying to teach her about emotions. And I'm like, what does being sad mean for a 19-month-old? What being angry is? What we are doing with these animals is not completely different. What we don't really know, because we are not dogs, is the range of emotion that they're probably going through. But then again, we don't really know what a 19-month-old is going through at that moment in time. We have a vague sense of it. I like to think that while anthropomorphism is bad, it is also strange when we think that we completely understand humans perfectly and that what we do is so clear and transparent that, you know, clearly animals must be learning in a very different way. Maybe there's more similarities than we think.
Yes, if you and I carried $100 bills around and gave them out to people, a lot of people would say, "I love you" to us for doing that.
Exactly.
So just to get it straight, when Bunny presses a button saying "Bunny's sad," we can probably infer that Bunny is sad, not just hungry or thirsty or wanting to play.
Correct. And I think part of what we see is that we can also look at their her body communication, right? So we can see it, how she's moving around, how she's embodying the emotions that she's experiencing. When Bunny pushes sad, she doesn't mean she wants food. No, usually that doesn't mean that. No.
Dogs are more wired than cats to observe and learn from us. I'm asking you a version of the "are dogs smarter than cats" question.
Oh, no. Okay, this is a very important question, man. So let me address it. Cats are equally good in tasks that see them match with dogs. The problem is that it's very hard to get cats motivated to participate, and most cats don't care. So the issue is not that the dogs are smarter than cats, it's the dogs are more motivated to interact with humans. They care more about what the humans do and want, and they like to engage with humans more than cats usually do, which means that it is hard to find enough cats that would be willing to go through the training and stick around and learn it and do it. But we do have a few hundred participants, and they've learned more than 24 buttons, and they are using them. So I think that the difference is really, like, you know, and for those of you who might have teenagers at home, it's kind of like cats are teenagers, right? And dogs are your 10-year-old or 7-year-old. They love you, they want to be with you, they like to hang out with you. And cats are more like teenagers. They might like to be more about themselves, and they're not as excited as spending time with you.
That's a great comparison. Just a final question. Dogs, when we are away from the house, I've read that they know the difference between half an hour and a couple of hours, but after that it is probably vague. You were talking about their sense of time. Do you think that they know we're away all day?
That's a very good question, and I don't think that there's enough work that's been done on this to show that. Because the way it has been measured, at least in one of the most famous studies that has done it, has been to look at how excited they are when you come home and how they like to re-engage with you. But of course, you know, it doesn't have to be that if you've been gone for 8 hours, you're going to be much more excited than if you've been gone for 4 hours. I mean, after all, how excited can you be when the other person comes back? So whether 8 hours or 4 hours or you know, being gone for days is something that they process differently. I think we need to find better methods to assess it. So if you start communicating about these things, and you can find ways to ask or talk, Or if you start asking them, like, when was dad gone? And they say morning and now is evening. Clearly, that individual has been gone for a while and not just like for 2 hours.
What a fascinating study. And I hope you get a few Kiwis signed up to be able to assist you with it. Very good of you to give us your time talking to us.
Thank you so much.